Baseline.
To baseline.
Very good execution of a two-on-one fast break.
Coast.
To coast.
Takes it all the way down the lane.
This.
Two-hand jam.
This is the NBA Today.
The NBA Today.
I'm Ryan Russillo, and you're listening to the NBA Today podcast, which is available from our pod center on ESPNRadio.com. Very light night in the association last night. Only two games. One that we will spend a good amount of time dissecting, Toronto and Cleveland, and another game that I'll just tell you this. The Heat beat the Pacers 113-83. Dwayne Wade had 100 points in the first quarter. That's not entirely true, but 18 in the first, didn't play the fourth. We are now paying closer attention to Michael Beasley's finishes. He did have 21-10. That's his fourth 20-10 game this season. The Heat 3-0 against the Pacers. And with Wade's 32 points on Tuesday, 18 in the first, as we mentioned, that tied Wade's season high for first quarter points. He did it against the Celts on January 6th, and one shy of his career high. He's hit for 19 in the first quarter twice in his career, 06 and 09. Okay, on to the stuff that we saw last night. By the way, emails NBAtoday@ESPNRadio.com. I will re-unveil my top 10/11 list, but I'll do it this time with Rick Bucher, who we may or may not have edited out the part where we promised that we would have him on Monday. It didn't work out, but we just rambled for a little while on Monday, so hopefully you enjoyed that. But now I'll have a documented, licensed hoop insider join us and tell me whether or not he agrees with my top 10/11 list. We'll get the latest on some of the rumors, Nate Robinson possibly to the Celtics, his thoughts, my thoughts on that later on in the show.
The couch.
I will retire now to my couch, a perpetual indulgence.
I want to spend some time talking about Toronto. I mentioned that on Monday because it's a team I feel like I haven't given enough credit. They've won 5 of 7 coming into last night's game against Cleveland with a great win against the Dallas Mavericks. Put up a huge number, scored 118 against them, one of those Sunday afternoon games. But when I think of Toronto, when I go back to the summer, I looked at the roster and thought, well, yeah, you bring in Turkoglu, bad defensive player, with Bargnani, bad defensive player. Chris Bosh isn't a great defensive player, but at the same time, when you surround him by other guys that are liabilities, then that's going to expose him even more. But it was enough of a roster with Bosh, Turkoglu, Bargnani, Calderon, and Jarrett Jack, which I like at the point guard, your combo there, depending on which way we want to go. Calderon did finish the game last night. And DeMar DeRozan, who I do like, but let's face it, he's a one-and-done out of USC. Amir Johnson has been playing better. They've been waiting on Reggie Evans. They had 30 of their first 30 games were in 53 days, which is a pretty substantial challenge for a team. Reggie Evans has been hurt. Nine different players on the roster this season. So there were a lot of things that I didn't like about him, but I think collectively you look at it and say they should be a team flirting with 500. They should be a team that's challenging Miami more than being challenged by a team like, say, Milwaukee. Now, Charlotte's been playing better at 8-2 in their last 10, 5 in a row. Chicago has played better with a recent loss. But when you look at Toronto, I think we should put them, or you should think of them as in that group with Miami, with Charlotte, with Chicago, not the Knicks, Milwaukee, or certainly Detroit or Washington. That's kind of how I felt, so I didn't love them, but there's enough there to be excited about. Now, defensively, they still rank last in efficiency. They have improved a bit there. So I'm trying to find, I was trying to look for why is this team playing better? Why are they flirting with that 500? And last night, they hung with Cleveland. Offensively, it was a pretty exciting game. It was 62-60 at the half. Cleveland led it. And let's look at this Toronto offense because there are elements that you're just not going to stop certain nights. Bosh is a terrific scorer. I don't know that he is in a great class. I don't think he's in that elite class. And I know I've thrown that out there before finishing games. He struggled in the second half, had only 3 points after a huge first half. And I think that's as much as him and his teammates kind of getting away from him at times. He did have a bucket late, but he did struggle, had a big turnover when he tried to take LeBron. But when he switched on Shaq, his teammates need to look for him to attack Shaquille. And I don't feel like his team did a good job with that. But Bargnani is so lethal that he's doing this thing now where he actually isn't looking to beat his man down the court. He's looking to trail the action because the big man on defense will run closer to the hoop and he won't get out on Bargnani. And Shaq, on certain possessions last night, had zero interest in closing out on Andrea. So there are parts of it that you feel good about. Turkoglu, though, is struggling. He had only 5 games last season where he scored in single digits. He's already had 10th. Last night was his 10th game. And this obviously ended up being a loss for Toronto, but it was a game that was extremely close, the final score being 108-100. And it did come down to the last few possessions. So as I look through some of my notes of the game, that Bargnani transition thing, the following is something to look for. you know, we mentioned Bosch. I think Andy Varejao did a pretty good job on Bosch, and Varejao is so good at getting out on the offensive action outside by the perimeter, you know, doubling on a guy with the ball and then recovering back on his man. It was just put on a show with that kind of stuff. But I want to hit on three specific plays here that show you the lack of just understanding that this Toronto defense has when it matters most. Like, there can be glimpses. Yeah, it can be a little bit better. Toronto still gives up the fifth most free throw attempts in the NBA. They're behind Indy, who fouls everybody. Dick Carter, their defensive guy under Jim O'Brien, who's been with them for years. That's his theory, is they can't call every foul, so they just foul the crap out of you the whole game. Golden State, another bad team. Milwaukee, bad team. And Utah actually allows the fourth most free throw attempts. I really believe in that stat, because that means that you're either bailing out the offensive player, you're just out of position and you have bad switches, so big guys are fouling quick guys and vice versa. But there was a play in the late in the game. It was Cleveland going left to right, if you're watching on TV. Shaq would go to the left block in the post. Mo Williams would bring it down on the left side, and LeBron would be in the corner. Mo Williams, entry pass to Shaq, catches it in the post. LeBron comes up to set a pick on Calderon. Turkoglu is trying to follow LeBron, and what ends up happening is there's no communication between Calderon and Turkoglu, and Mo Williams uses that LeBron screen, just keeps going down to the corner, into the three-point. Shaq kicks it out, wide-open shot, three. That was the biggest shot of the game last night. So you're looking at it at first saying, okay, you guys need to figure out, you need to communicate whether you're switching or you're staying, and they didn't know what they were doing in either scenario. They ran the exact same play a couple possessions later, and on this one, entry pass to Shaq, and they still, on defense for Toronto, had no clue what they wanted to do. Like, not saying you're going to stop it if you understand, but understand if you're switching or if you're doubling or you're going to follow them. And in this scenario, Turkoglu decided he was going to stay with the area. So a switch, I know I made that a little confusing, but basically he was like, okay, Mo Williams hit a three, so now I'm going to stay with Mo Williams and not follow LeBron. Nobody told Calderon. Calderon's lost. Shaq hands it off to LeBron, curl, layup at the hoop. And the funny thing is, Bargnani didn't even know what the play, he didn't even know what was going on. He's looking at it like, oh, you wanted me to move down? Because there's an area there where Bargnani could actually move down and follow LeBron and try to close him off at the hoop. It's the same exact play. Chris Webber did a great job talking about this last night. Called it, they were calling it last night, they were calling it split, and he said there's six different variations off of it. You saw two there. Toronto was lost on both. Also, the transition defense for Toronto was terrible late in the game. Stop the ball. You learn that in third grade. And I couldn't believe how clear some of these layups were. So Toronto is going to score more points than a lot of teams. They're going to be really tough to defend, especially with development of Bargnani. But until they clean up some of the stuff that that a high school coach can figure out, then they're going to be in serious trouble. Other than that, taking out of this game, Shaq did finish, had a good first half, so it was good to see him get those minutes, because I think that's been one of the most underrated storylines here, as we put him on the cover of magazine saying, hey, Shaq and LeBron, this is going to be amazing, and it hasn't really been amazing, but he had some good minutes there late for them. My man Rick Bucher joins us now. We'll get to some of the trade rumors, which, yeah, we'll do a little how realistic some of these are with Rick. And Rick, I want to start with, I was texting you the other night because I didn't want to just drop this on you.
Right.
Unknown. But I did a top 10 list. I made it top 11. I know you've already called me out for that. Do you want to hear mine first, or do you want to unveil yours first? Because I did mine on Monday. So.
Yeah, no. I'd be happy to hear yours, and I do appreciate that you gave me the slight heads up, because unlike Bill Simmons and some other people, I actually don't carry lists in my pocket.
Yeah, isn't that great? Don't you love it? Like, hey, Russillo, name your top four small forwards from the Big East in the 1980s.
And yeah, like, try it on ESPN News, where they've given you five questions, and they go, hey, by the way, who's your top three players in the league right now?
Yeah, you know what happens, too? And then we get destroyed because you forget something. Like, I went on a
absolutely.
Memphis radio station, and they were like, biggest name that's going to be traded. And I'm like, well, I think I could see Tracy McGrady traded, even though I've just spent 10 minutes saying why he wouldn't be.
Right.
And I said, never doubt, this is before Curry's surgery, but Donnie Walsh finding somebody, and I don't think he's going to get traded, but finding some way to get creative, because no trade or no contract is untradeable after Rafe LaFrance's deal actually getting moved. I believe nothing is impossible, as KG likes to say.
Yeah.
And then I thought about it and went, that he just sprung it on me. Now I feel like an idiot because there's no way Tracy McGrady is getting traded to the Knicks. Like, that's not happening. See what I'm saying?
Right.
All right. I just, right. I helped you out there. I kind of went off a little bit. You're right. Simmons will just go top four D-League six-man right now.
Yeah.
Okay. Are you ready?
Cowherd's good for that, too.
Who?
Cowherd.
Yeah, but you could just make up names of Cowherd.
Well, because he won't know.
Yeah, you could just be like, chocolate,
Who else do we want to throw under the bus before we get going here?
I don't know. You should try to do that. That could be like our own little personal joke. And be like, who's in your top four? And you could be like, Lightning Jones. And he'd go, yes, Lightning Jones. He's terrific off the dribble. Okay, before you get sick here.
Yeah.
All right, these are in no particular order, although you can tell one half is weighted a little bit more than the other. All right, my top 10/11 list goes as this. LeBron, Kobe, Chris Paul, Dwayne Wade, Brandon Roy, Tim Duncan, the Big German, as they call him in Dallas, Dirk, Melo, Steve Nash, Kevin Durant, and Dwight Howard.
Wow, so if I'm reading this correctly, no Paul Pierce.
No Paul Pierce. Now, I remember I almost run out of the city 2 years ago when they were going on their run, and I didn't have Pierce as a top five player in the league, which was absurd.
Yeah, so you're continuing that down that road.
I think he's awesome, too. That's the thing. But we always say this. We go, hey, is this guy top 10? And all of us say, oh, yeah, he's a top 10 guy. And then when you start putting the list together, you got to cut dudes.
Yeah, I don't have Brandon Roy in my top 10.
You don't, huh?
No. And I went... And this, see, I had a different conundrum. I go Kobe, LeBron, Dwayne Wade, Dwight Howard, Carmelo, Chris Paul, Deron Williams, Steve Nash, Paul Pierce. And then this is the conundrum, because when I originally made my list, I put the Big German, as you say, at number 10, and I had Tim Duncan not in my top 10, and my reason for that was that you can't play him every night. That he's now in that mode where you've got to conserve him. You've got to find a way to you can't use him every single night and use him with impunity, shall I say? But then I finally was like, okay, well, wait a minute, but Duncan still impacts the game at both ends, and I cannot say that Dirk does, and so now I'm down to choosing it between Nash and Dirk. And I don't know why I'm, you know, I mean, I could throw Paul Pierce in there as that equation, and quite honestly, if anybody left any one of those guys out of their top 10, then they're not going to get an argument from me. I think it's a little tomato-tomato there. But they don't... All those guys, there's a question of whether they impact the game at all at the defensive end. I still think that Paul Pierce can and has demonstrated at times that he has. My big question, the reason that I don't have Brandon Roy there is that I don't think he impacts it at the defensive end. And there are matchups where... you don't have to double team him or double team him hard to slow him down or make the game difficult. And I can't say that about any of those other guys. This interesting thing that you bring up by doing this is that we are about to see a sea change in the league, because we just named three or four guys who are right at that cusp, and Kevin Durant, Derrick Rose. Those are some of the guys that, in my mind, are right there. You know, very soon we have to put them in the top 10, if not now. For
I have a hard time leaving Duncan off, and I know that this is different. Like, if we were just going to go by who would you want to build your team forward, then you'd leave off Dirk, Duncan, and Nash. Mm-hmm. That'd be easy. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that's what we're trying to do here, and I think it's kind of a floating definition of what we're talking about. Maybe fluid's a better word. But you know, KG, somebody I would always put in this list, but you can't do it now because he's not playing.
Well, that was my caveat. That's why leaving Duncan and KG out was easy, because I could say, hey, they're just, you know, they're not healthy, and I don't know that at this stage of their careers that the clock is going to go back the other way. I don't think you're ever, I mean, if they've already been finding ways to extend Duncan as is. They've already been finding ways to protect him physically. Same with KG. I don't think at any point that this is going to go back the other direction. So that's why I could sneak Dirk in there ahead of Duncan. But the fact of the matter is, Duncan is still such a influential presence at the defensive end as well as the offensive end. And let's face it, I saw Andrea Bargnani going past Dirk Nowitzki with impunity just the other day, and I'm thinking, yeah, okay, I can't take that guy over Duncan for that very reason.
Well, a problem I had leaving Duncan off, and that is just because when he has played, it's been awesome. You know, like he's second in the league in Hollinger's numbers there.
Yeah,
which isn't the absolute. I think I'm more down the middle on what those numbers actually mean. I think they're good tools to use. But
right.
You're right. When Duncan just the other day is like, yeah, Pop's going to sit me on the second of back-to-backs, and I'm all for it.
Yeah.
Then I think it's tough to say this is one of the top 10 franchise guys, even though then when his playoffs start up and he's healthy, he's as valuable or as dangerous as a playoff guy that they'll be out there playing when it comes April.
I also go back to something that somebody in the organization told me a couple weeks ago, which is, look at our record when Duncan gets really big numbers. He's in that category now of guys that teams don't double team, don't necessarily, depending on the matchup, who they have, they don't double team him hard. They dare him to beat them. And we saw the same evolution with Shaq, and this uh-huh. happens a lot. Probably more with big guys, or sooner with big guys, is we'll let you get your numbers, but because you no longer can score efficiently enough and quick enough that we just say, you know what, you're too devastating. You're going to go around our guys too quickly. If it takes a guy 20 seconds in the shot clock and he's got to post and repost and repost for bigs, teams will take that. Just like, you know, with guards, you know, when you have to run them off three or four screens to get them the ball, yeah, eventually they score, and that may still be his team's best option, but it's not winning basketball, and that's I haven't broken down the numbers, but that's where, you know, that's where PER, some of these other numbers completely fall apart. Is you can look at it and go, oh, well, this guy's still, he's still generating numbers, but it's not within the context of, okay, what is that costing your team overall in wins and losses, and what is that costing other guys on the floor? You know, can you dovetail it with the efficiency of the rest of your team? I mean, Elton Brand has been famous for it. Elton Brand has made millions and millions of dollars for being a double-double guy that don't win you games. And at the end of the day, that has to be factored in, and I've yet to see anybody have an equation that says these are the numbers and there's a win losses part of the formula.
You left Durant off. I'm going to assume you're just going to say, well, he's young and I can go ahead and do that.
And because I've been, you know, I've been wearing the, whatever that blue is, that blue and orange, I've been wearing it since last spring when I said that the Thunder were going to be a playoff team this year.
And they're
going
to be.
And, well, I believe...
Wait a minute, you said this summer, and now that they're on pace for it, you're going to back out?
Well, because, we've seen this. I mean, we saw it with the Portland Trailblazers a couple years ago. At this stage of the season, everybody's like, wow, they're going to make the playoffs. And then you get to the pre-playoff games where you're playing every night in March and April, and every game is a playoff game. And for a team that's never been through that, that's a grind and a pressure that is very much like guys going to the playoffs for the first time. They're just not used to playing every night where you're watching the standings. You're watching, oh, we're a half game back. We have to get this one because we're about to go on the road. That just brings a whole new dynamic. And I haven't seen that team operate under it. And they didn't use their cap space to go out and get another veteran big like I expected them to. So I believe more today than I did a couple weeks ago. One, because Blake Griffin's not coming back, and because I've had people tell me that the Clippers have essentially quit on Dunleavy. I mean, they're playing because they got a lot of talent, but at the down the stretch, I don't know that they're going to bring it home. I have my doubts that they're going to bring it home. They are so talented. If you just sort of look through a blank prism, I'd have to say that the Clippers would take that spot ahead of Oklahoma City. But there's some other factors there where I believe Oklahoma City has a chance, and I believe it's better now because of what I've heard about the Clippers situation. But I don't think they're a lock.
Yeah, the fact that it's based more on defense, their success with a young team, gives me a real good feeling about them moving the rest of the way as if they were just a team outscoring guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some of the names we left off. Joe Johnson, you know what's the most ironic thing of this is that I had a hard time leaving him off, but it's the top 10 guys in the world, so it's not going to be everybody.
Yep.
But we had emailers when I unveiled the list, and more people were mad about Pau Gasol being left off.
Oh, stop it.
Yeah, the Gasol thing is, I mean, just stop.
Especially now, right. I mean, that's, you know, Mark Stein is, I think he's my friend. I think he's terrific. The idea of Pau Gasol being the MVP of the first trimester is just the most outrageous thing.
Especially after missing games,
we all take wrong turns now and then. We don't have enough time to go into why that's.
But the editors loved it, so that's what you always have to remember.
Yeah.
Like, hey, that's different.
Yeah.
Maybe somebody can have DeMar DeRozan as their MVP.
Yeah,
the
you know what?
Time.
We are guilty of that as anybody. It's like, you know, we can't talk about the same guys. Let's throw a twist out there. Hey, and people are outraged. They're responding. It must have been a great idea. No, maybe it's because it's just so crazy that, you know, every Joe Blow out there is going to blow us out of the water for it.
Chris Bosh, not in either of our top tens, and I actually don't feel bad about it.
Yeah, I don't either. I think he's really good. I think he can be part of a winning equation. But I don't believe that he's a franchise player. And, you know, we're all of these guys are guys that you could build your team around and say, hey, I got a chance to go somewhere. I could see in my mind's eye with the right pieces around him, that this guy could lead me to a championship, and that includes Kevin Durant, and for me, it includes Derrick Rose. We haven't mentioned him. I had Joe Johnson down, and even among the coming guys, the guys who could step into that top 10, and I scratched him out just because I just can't quite put him there.
I know, but all he's done is played every minute. All he's done is played defense, played two positions, and is really, really hard to guard when he decides he's going to take you to the
hole. No, it's.
But I can't put him
in either.
So
I'll say this: I might have to take Joe Johnson over Brandon Roy in my top 10.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
That's your East Coast bias.
even though I'm in California,
I didn't get anybody saying.
But you know what? My reason for that is, maybe it's because Roy. Roy physically has issues every year, and Joe Johnson doesn't.
Yeah, he missed the Monday game in Washington. You know what? I don't want to go too much further with this. I appreciate you doing the homework, though. And, you know, I would say the only disagreement I have with you is Deron Williams. But let's save that for another day because I want to get to a couple of these rumors. Can we do that?
Sure.
All right. Let me try to spring something on you that you wouldn't be expecting. But, no, seriously, how many teams do you think are going to really look to get creative? Or they're going to play we don't want to mess with the unknown with this summer, and we're going to be left looking at Chris Gatlin getting moved again.
No, you know what? Honestly, I believe that all of the top teams are going to look at making one more move. How big it's going to be, I don't know. But it's sitting right there for any number of teams. And so much of it, and we said this at the beginning of the year, so much of it is just health. But... Mm-hmm. I don't see, as good as the Lakers can be, I don't see them being dominant. I know that they inquired about Devin Harris from the Nets, which to me says they are very worried about their perimeter defense, and they got to be looking at that Artest for Ariza trade and going, you know what? We, D- Derek Fisher is older than we thought. Jordan Farmar is not a defensive presence. Kobe is going to be driving one of those wheelies to get up and down the floor here any second. What are we going to do in a situation where we're playing against some really quick perimeter and maybe more than one? We're in a tough spot, and so I believe Boston is in the same boat. I believe Orlando has to look at their team and go, hey, you know what? We signed Gortat and Brandon Bass. We're not using them, and we're shaky in some areas. We need to parlay that. Cleveland still has some questions and has been looking around, is looking for a legit power forward. Although I never thought I said this. Somebody brought this up to me. I think it's very legit. I could see where at the beginning of the year I saw in no way that the Cleveland Cavaliers could win a championship this year. I see a way in which they could back into it simply because of the health of the Boston Celtics and the Los Angeles Lakers.
Well, I agree. I picked Cleveland coming out of the East, and there are times I was off of it again because there are stretches where they don't look as impressive as a team that you expect to maybe compete for a title. But you know, the Celtics are playing this game of, oh, we're going to rest this guy. When you rest a guy, a gamer here, that's one thing. When you shut guys down for 3 weeks at a time, that means it's a serious issue. And I have no idea what to expect from the Celtics. I still feel like if they're healthy and playing their best, they're better than anyone, including the Lakers. But I just I have very strong doubts that we're going to see that.
You should. You should. Especially, you know, this dance with Garnett. We went through it last year, and I just
do you remember what that was too? I mean, like, so people can just be reminded of it was like a strain against Utah on a missed alley-oop, and it was just going to shut him down for a week, and he never played again.
And
it was updated every 2-3 weeks.
Yep. And that we're going through some of that now. And I got to tell you, the you know when they give you video from practice, and they are announcing he looked good in practice. Let's just think back in our minds. When was the last time you saw video of a star in practice being used as confirmation that guy will be coming back in 10 days?
And never seeing him at a shoot-around in the arena, because I used to go to those games, and I would go really early because I used to like to watch the different routines players would have and teams would have, and I'd never see him there. But then if there was a chance that he was out there doing something, they'd want you to like run the video.
Yep.
That was the thing that was weird about the Celtics last year. Like, I understand the competitive advantage and not wanting to give up all the information on the status, you know, health status of your guys, but it was just this silly dance that you just got tired of. And then you go on these hits, and because I cover the team, people would be like, what do you know? I don't know. And then people wanted to throw out the idea that he was soft because he wouldn't take a needle for the pain. And it's like, well, he ended up having a pretty significant injury. I don't think this is like Novocaine on a filling.
I'm never, ever, ever, ever going to call Kevin Garnett soft.
Yeah, of all people, this question his commitment and his pain.
I do think he's a front runner, and I do think he barks at guys when he's up by 20, and you can't find him when you're down by 7. But there's a little bit of that where I go, okay, you know what, you just need to ratchet that back because I need to see that all the time, or I don't want to see it. But as far as his commitment to playing and playing through pain and all of that, he might quite honestly be the last guy out. You know, after Kobe, he'd be the last guy I'd second guess on that.
How hurt is Kobe right now?
He's banged up. I mean, no question.
Can you text him right now? And I'm just kidding with you.
Yeah. Well, he's probably. Well, let me see what time. No. Yeah. The funny thing is I've, with some of these injuries, I have texted him at like, you know, I've gotten the call from SportsCenter, and I've texted him at like 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, my little text goes ding when my BlackBerry goes off.
Do you have a Kobe alert?
He's gotten right back to me. He's like in the gym or on the way to the gym, or, I mean, the dude's weird.
Have you ever had a couple glasses of wine too many and been like drunk dial Kobe?
No.
I had Bill Buckner's cell phone number once in my phone, and my buddies get hammered and called them in Wyoming, and just wanted to let them know that it wasn't his fault, like Matt Damon at the end of Good Will Hunting. That didn't go over well, and I ended up erasing the number.
But I have had a couple guys, for whatever reason, that, like, there was a period there, and I'm trying to think if Rick Fox was still playing or not. For whatever reason, he, I don't think he was drunk, I think he was butt dialing me or something. My phone would show that somebody had called, and I'd say hello, and I could hear, like, like he was taking his kids to the mall or some crazy stuff, but it wasn't, he had not meant to dial me, and that happened at least like a half a dozen times over about a 2 week period, and I finally called him, and I said, look, dude, you gotta stop. Whatever's going with your phone, man.
Maybe you were among his, like, favorites, but he only had one, and it was you.
I seriously, seriously doubt that.
I'm always afraid of keeping people's numbers in my cell phone for you know, the reasons of people picking it up, or maybe me mistaking it. I called Todd Walker once, and I thought I was calling a girl, and that was weird. He used to play Red Sox.
Yeah,
he played second base for the Red Sox, and he figured it out immediately. Was like, that didn't make any sense.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, I wasn't. I didn't want to ask what you were looking for in that 2-2 slider from Tim Hudson in the 0-3 playoffs.
Yeah.
I was calling for something else. But that's good stuff. I think we've covered it all then today.
Excellent. Actually, you were going to ask me about Nate.
Nate Robinson of the Celtics. I'm sorry.
What goodness gracious.
That doesn't make any sense. Why are the Knicks going to do the Celtics that favor by taking back an expired? Do they love Tony Allen? Do they want Brian Scalabrine's leadership?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know.
I mean, I guess if they threw in a first-round pick, but they're only going to take back an expiring. Their first-round pick isn't going to be anything that significant. So I have a hard time believing that the Knicks, even though I think Walsh, you know, do anything he feels like is going to help his team, would then say, hey, let me do the Celts a favor, and you can have this energy guy who will be a fan favorite coming off the bench, and it'll be I just don't think teams like to do that within the same division.
No, it's a little bit like the Kevin Martin for Jose Calderon.
That's a joke. Can we put that one to bed? That's not happening.
No, it's not happening. And it was Kings generated, and quite honestly, it's a little bit like, I mean, the Bosch Bynum thing, while it's sexy and you can see reasons why both teams might want to do it, that conversation's never been had either, other than one of the GMs calling the other one and going, hey, where did that come from?
Are you serious? So that conversation, as you know, has never happened. Like, hey.
They've never discussed that trade. I can tell you that Toronto would do that deal. And there are people with
Why wouldn't they do that deal?
Are frustrated with Bynum that would do that deal. And Bill Simmons, for one, thinks that's the greatest deal ever, that you can close the book on the Lakers winning the championship if they do that. I think it's foolish, because Bynum gives you a defensive presence that you're not going to get from Bosch. Offensively, it's great, and is Bosch would he be a great triangle guy? Absolutely, but there's a shot blocking presence, a size presence. It amazes me how everybody forgets when Bynum is on and playing and is not caring about his offensive numbers and is just rebounding and moving defensively, just how unstoppable and just how what a thicket they are to get through. You don't toss that away just because a guy's trying to make the All-Star team the first couple of months of the season.
Yeah, I love Bynum when Gasol's not in there, and that's when they're at their best.
There's a whole dynamic there that. Again, reason why Gasol can't be your MVP candidate is that guys look at what Bynum gives them at both ends of the floor, and this is another case with Phil, sort of a little bit with Shaq and Kobe years ago, where he would beat up Kobe because you couldn't call out Shaq; he was too sensitive.
Right.
Well, Gasol is the same way. Gasol really is you can't jump on him because he'll pill bug on you. You can beat up on Bynum because he'll still play, and you're not going to lose him. And so you beat up on Bynum because you can't beat up on Gasol. And the real caveat here is that because Kobe has become a post-up guy, it's made that post crowded. It's a lot harder to keep when Bynum and Gasol and all those guys are healthy. Now that takes up post opportunities. That cuts into the post opportunities for Bynum and Gasol, and somebody's shorts are going to get a little bunched.
I got to actually follow up on something, though, and I only have a few more minutes with you, and I'm sure...
We're in negative minutes now, because we quit about 5 minutes ago.
That's all right, though. But when we talked about the Calderon, Kevin Martin thing, did you say that you thought Sacramento wanted to make that deal and Toronto doesn't?
Well, Sacramento floated it just to see where it would go.
See, I have a hard time believing Sacramento would want to do it. I really think they want to give this Martin-Evans thing a chance, even though everyone seems to want to bash it after seeing it for like 12 minutes total.
Yeah, I the reasons for floating it, I don't know.
I wouldn't want Calderon for Martin, to be honest with you. If I was in charge of Sacramento,
I'm not sure that I would either. But it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense on either end. It especially doesn't make sense for Toronto. You've already got a host of guys who need the ball in their hands, and whatever you want to say about Calderon, and I'm not a huge fan. He is a point guard. And those still are a far rarer commodity than wings who score a lot on bad teams.
All right. So did we do enough to destroy the Nate Robinson thing, or should you yell at me a little bit?
No, I don't really. I don't want to. If you talk about it a lot, then it gains momentum. And
don't you think that would be a classic Ainge, like float the South Terrace score? Hey, would you want to do something?
Yeah.
I noticed your reaction there. Are you in a way agreeing that Ainge has been known to float some ridiculously one-sided trades out there?
I love Danny, absolutely. I mean, he doesn't like me.
You know that?
What's that?
He doesn't like me. Which is unfortunate because I've always felt like I've been very fair. But he called.
You know what? I think it's just the day.
Well, whatever it was that day.
Unless the brain doctor said that you're a guy that he shouldn't like.
No, the brain doctor likes me. I went to lunch with him. But I didn't realize...
Well, he might like you, but he might have determined that your mix with Danny is not a good mix, and so Danny needs to not like you. Or because of the way your brains are structured, that you just inherently, that he won't like you. That it's not personal. It's more of sort of a brain chemistry thing.
It's actually a funny story that I've never told before, but I did the TV up there for quite a while, mm-hmm. and it's been known to be a tad Homer-type coverage in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And you know me, I like to change a channel every now and then, watch other teams play.
Mm-hmm.
So I would come in as the guy that maybe talked to some people in the league and could give you perspective on another team's storyline, however the matchup worked, and people seemed to like it. But you know, the Celts kept running these theories out there that Doc was great with young players, which... Most coaches are terrible with young players. They just want to beat them down and then build them back up.
Right.
And they were trying to sell like Delonte West as this great two guard of the future. And they went like 5-13 to start the season. And
right.
I was on TV and I just said, look, this youth movement and Doc is great with these guys. Like none of these guys have been remarkably better. I mean, Al's going to get better, I think. And
right.
I like Doc as a coach, but
right.
you know, I just basically said, let's stop thinking that he has this great track record of building up these great young players or getting them to be better than they would be, even though
yes.
his offense is awesome. He's the best out of timeouts. There's a million things I would love about Doc, and I really don't have anything bad to say about him. But
right.
they were 5-13, and it was another season where people were going to say they were going to get 50 wins, and I just shook my head going, this is absurd. And that day, I guess Danny called my co-host, which I won't name, and blasted me to him. Just blasted, said, I don't do my homework. I just take what GMs say and make up stuff. And it's really unfortunate because I wish I did less homework, Rick. I wish I didn't care about it as much. You know, he probably has forgotten about it, although I'm sure he downloads this every
week. Absolutely. Absolutely. He's guessed it.
He's a good GM, but he's been known to throw out some terrible trade offers to other teams. I've heard other teams say, we don't even check in with our GMs on some of his offers.
Yeah, no. And sometimes sometimes he trades other players, and you know what? Danny was a sneaky player in the way he played, and he's a sneaky GM, and he will use whatever artifice he has available to gain a competitive advantage. And there's a part of me that really admires that. But when he's doing it and he besmirches my job in doing it, you know, or he's gonna take it out of my potential integrity, then, you know, that's where I go, you know what, I gotta be very careful around this guy. And it goes back, I mean, I honestly believe this is just, this is in some ways, it's Celtic tradition, because, and it goes back to Auerbach, you know, I mean, he would do it in a million ways, and I think it's just been handed down. I think Don Nelson is the same way with Golden State.
It's perfectly okay
to lie to anyone and lie right to their face because, hey, we're playing a game.
And you know what? I give him a ton of credit for the way he's been able to be patient, and his patience paid off, and they got a championship that seemed about as unlikely in that May lottery as anything.
And you know what? And it makes it entertaining. It's the same reason I appreciate Mark Cuban and all that he does. People can say he's a meddling owner. You know what? He makes things interesting, and he's a gambler. I like guys who push their chips to the middle of the table and say, "Give me another card." I'd much rather see that than some guy who says, "Hey, you know what? We're in ninth place, and our fans will come around because they think we got a shot. We're good. We're good."
You know what? We're good. Thanks,
good.
Man. I know we went a little Celtics there at the end. I try to avoid that because I don't want this to be the Simmons DVD extras.
Yeah.
But
yeah. Well, I don't think he covers the NBA anymore on a full-time basis. Now that he wrote the book, he's done with it, and he's gone on to greener pastures. At least based on our conversations, I'd have to say that he's not as...
If I wrote that book, I'd take a year off from the league. All right. Good talking to you, buddy. Thank you very much for your time today.
You got it.
All right, that's Rick Bucher. You can see all of his stuff on ESPN.com. ESPN the magazine has a new feature out. I don't even know what it is because I didn't ask him, so I apologize. Coming up on Friday, we'll do stats to impress women. We do have a great game on Thursday night. I'm supposed to go to Avatar, so I'm going to have to tape it and watch it. I will watch Los Angeles and Cleveland. I will tape that. But I got to get out of here because I got another show to do today. Thanks for listening to the NBA Today on ESPNRadio.com. Spot Center, I'm Ryan Russillo.
Thank you for listening to the NBA Today. Download more ESPN podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or on the Pod Center page at ESPNRadio.com.